Police Academy is your source for the no apologies, no spin truth about all things police. Discussions about why cops do what they do, avoiding speeding tickets, or just how to stay alive can all be found right here. No questions out of bounds, no topic too sensitive. This is Police Academy. Do you understand
the words that are coming out of my mouth? What we're dealing with here, littering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoking the reefer.
Call the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah. No, that's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one solid weekend of training to get that bag.
Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome back to the Police Academy podcast. This should be a relatively short episode. I just want to talk about the Daniel Shaver incident a little bit more. I have a correction to make that is important. I'll lead with my mistakes, and I made one on that episode. And then I want to talk about AR-15s in law enforcement and the importance of that particular tool. So let's do it. All right, first and foremost, as I've said before, if you've been around for a while, I will always try to lead with my mistakes. If I miss something or get a fact wrong, etc., I will point that out. And someone on Facebook pointed out that in the Daniel Shaver incident, which we talked about a couple episodes ago, the officer giving the commands was not the officer who shot Daniel Shaver. The officer who shot Daniel Shaver was Brailsford. I wrongfully assumed he was the one giving commands, even though I did have an inkling that I better double check, and I didn't. And that's my bad. I should have made sure he was also the one giving commands. The body camera was on him, and you can see him, you know, shooting the rounds that killed Daniel Shaver. But it's actually the sergeant on scene, Sergeant Charles Langley, giving the commands. Now, does this change anything? In that episode, I basically brought it down to, well, this is a tragic situation. Unfortunately, someone died, even though they weren't trying to cause any sort of threat toward the officers. However, it is a justified use of deadly force based on Daniel's actions. The only mistakes that were made on the part of the police came from the commands that were being given. It was very odd listening to the commands that were being given because, number one, they were just demeaning and like condescending in a sense, calling Daniel young man instead of sir, and just the power trippy nature of the commands being given didn't sit well with me, and they still don't. And you know, in that episode, that's really where we focused on when it came to what mistakes the police made. It was all in the commands. But in the end, the commands were still, in my opinion, clear enough that Shaver should have known not to reach down to his waistband, and that is what got him killed. When it comes to Brailsford, the officer who was actually tried for second-degree murder and was acquitted, the fact that he wasn't giving the commands even more so points to that this was the correct decision from the jury. He was simply responding to the actions of Daniel Shaver. He heard the commands being given by this power-tripping sergeant and knew that Shaver should know if you reach down toward your waistband again, we're probably going to shoot you, and he responded in that way. And I'm not saying that he can legally do that just because his sergeant said so. He actually has the legal authority to do that based on the circumstances. But Brailsford, in my opinion, based on the fact that he wasn't even giving the commands, is completely exonerated in this case. It's terrible. Shaver should not have died. He was not armed. However, his actions led to him getting shot. The important question in this case is, and always has been, did the police cause Shaver or contribute to him making that mistake? Did, for example, the commands confuse him or make him nervous and unable to think clearly, etc.? He was already intoxicated. We know that now. but did the officers contribute to escalating the situation, confusing Shaver and causing him to make a mistake in his intoxicated state? That question applies to the sergeant, not Brailsford. So if anyone should have been on trial, and it doesn't work this way because Brailsford pulled the trigger, but if anyone should be answering those questions and be held responsible, if we find that, yes, the commands given did contribute to Shaver's death, it's the sergeant giving the commands. And, you know, when I found out that it was an experienced officer and the supervisor, you know, in that episode, I said, well, if there's a supervisor there, he needed to step in here. Well, it's kind of sad because the guy giving commands was the supervisor. And knowing that, watching this video again is even worse, because you have an experienced officer who is in charge of other officers and is affecting the culture, at the very least, amidst the officers that he's in charge of. And he has this kind of attitude and treats the public this way. He should know better, first of all. And his demeanor in this situation, in my opinion, is completely unacceptable. I don't know if he still has a job. But if he does, I hope they're having some very tough conversations with him and keeping an eye on him. Because if this is normal, he should not be a police officer. All right, moving on. I want to talk about AR-15s a little bit, namely because this Police One article just came out. You know, the rifle used in the Daniel Shaver shooting was an AR-15 style rifle. That is the most common rifle carried by law enforcement in the United States. It is pretty versatile. It's not too expensive. It's a reliable platform. AR does not stand for assault rifle. Just for the record, it stands for Armalite. It's an Armalite 15 style platform. Lots of different manufacturers make it now. Armalite is the one who originally created it. It's not, does not stand for assault rifle, as if that makes a difference anyways. But this article from Police One is about South Carolina, and it starts by saying, quote, "Some South Carolina troopers have been buying and bringing their own high-powered rifles to work to replace their less lethal state-issued shotguns," end quote. Well, first, and I'm not going to read the rest of the article, that's the gist of it. South Carolina troopers have been buying their own AR-15s and bringing them to work because the agency isn't apparently providing them. They only provide shotguns. Okay, well, first, in this first sentence, they call shotguns less lethal. And they're not calling them less than lethal. They're calling them less lethal than assault rifles. And okay, technically, you can make that argument. But not really. They're no less lethal than an AR-15 if used correctly. They're less practical, I think, is what they're going for. Shotguns hold, you know, 10 or so rounds, including, you know, having a side carrier that holds extra rounds. An AR-15, the first magazine that you have in it all the time has 30 rounds in it. Then you have backup mags, 30 rounds each. Most guys carry at least two backup magazines. That's 90 rounds versus 10. Okay, so there's a huge difference in the amount of firepower available to an officer right there. Rifles are more accurate, which means there's less chance of collateral damage. And, you know, especially if you're shooting buckshot or anything other than a slug out of a shotgun, you're shooting multiple projectiles out. You might hit the suspect with some of them, but you might hit somebody else with the other ones. That's a big risk. And in the age of the AR-15, really there's not a whole lot of uses that make more sense, or a whole lot of situations, rather, that make more sense to carry a shotgun into than an AR-15 if you have one. Now, this is surprising. Because to read this about South Carolina, and maybe they have some sort of equipment allowance. That's what my department did. We got a certain amount every year, basically like a bonus that we were supposed to use to buy equipment, maintain our uniforms, buy tools or guns or whatever. That's how I bought my AR-15 that I carried at work. And maybe South Carolina has something like that. Sounds like they don't, though, and because they're looking to fund, you know, buying rifles as an agency for all of their officers. They're way behind the ball, if that's the case. The North Hollywood shootout happened in 1997. I will post a link to that if you haven't seen it. It's pretty interesting. A couple of guys rob a bank. They are armored in the sense that they have heavy armor on, and the officers responding couldn't hurt them because none of them had rifles. They actually had to go into a gun shop and get rifles out of it because SWAT wasn't there yet and nobody had the firepower to do anything about it. People are getting shot left and right by these guys who do have rifles, and it was a huge wake-up moment for law enforcement agencies in the United States, at least, that said, wait a minute, bad guys, if they choose to, have much more firepower than the officers responding to and dealing with them. That should not be the case. So after that happened, again, 1997, that was over 20 years ago. A lot of agencies in the wake of this started allowing their officers to carry high-powered rifles. Like I said, I carried one at work. I never pulled my shotgun out of the cruiser once I had my rifle. I did before I had purchased my rifle, but once that rifle was in there, I didn't have any reason to carry a shotgun. I could have just left it at the station. The AR is a much more practical platform in modern policing today, in my opinion. And someone might make an argument against that. I'd love to hear it. But the AR is indispensable, in my opinion. I think every officer should have one in the car and should be well-trained on it, proficient with that tool, just as they should be with their sidearm. But the fact that South Carolina officers are just now, and I'm assuming it's in response to what's going on around the country with ambushes and police officers getting killed so frequently in these mass shootings, that the fact that these officers are now just starting to go, hey, we need to go get our own rifles, is kind of shocking. And hey, if you're a South Carolina trooper and you want to provide some input there, I'd love to hear it. Shoot me an email, policeacademypodcast@gmail.com, and we'll talk about it. I'd love to hear more insight on that. I definitely don't believe everything I hear, see, or read, and even if it's coming from a reputable law enforcement website, you know, it might not be the whole story. So who knows? If it is what it seems to be in this article, South Carolina needs to step it up and make sure those officers have the ability to carry these rifles and make it feasible for them to purchase them or buy them for the officers. The Daniel Shaver incident, although the rifle that he had was only basically a pellet gun and he didn't have it on him and wasn't trying to hurt the officers, but had he had a real rifle, a high-powered rifle, and intended to either shoot hotel guests and or the police when they arrived, these officers definitely needed to have their rifles. They should have had their rifles in this case. And I think important thing to point out here is that just because the police bring a tool to a situation doesn't mean that they're going to use it or want to use it or intend to use it. The officers in the Daniel Shaver case, again, should have had their rifles. That doesn't mean that they wanted to use them. Unfortunately, Brailsford had that little saying inscribed in the side of his rifle, which didn't really bode well for him, at least in the court of public opinion. But when we talk about, a lot of times the term used is militarization of the police, and it usually comes along with some picture the media presents to you of a police officer with an AR-15 slung across their chest. But again, people need to realize that that is just a tool. And the fact that an officer has that tool there is a precaution. It is in preparation for something that could happen. It is not an invitation for something to happen. And if there are officers who are trying to create the invitation to use that rifle, well, they shouldn't be police officers. And obviously the community, the law enforcement community, and any sort of accountability system in place should be looking out for those types of officers. But it is just a tool. The police aren't being militarized just because officers have an AR-15 in the cruiser. They should have AR-15s in the cruiser because the bad guys have that and more. That was a very difficult lesson that we learned way back in 1997. And apparently, not everyone got the message. All right, that's it for this one. Ladies and gents, thanks for tuning in. As I mentioned earlier, the North Hollywood shootout video is linked in the show notes to this episode. If you have questions, comments, concerns, gripes, bunched up britches, or complaints, please reach out at policeacademypodcast@gmail.com, or you can find me on Twitter and or Facebook. I'd love to hear from you. I have a list of topics I'm trying to get caught up on. If you've sent topics in, I haven't forgotten you. I'll get to it, I promise. But I gotta take it one step at a time. So we'll see you all in the next one. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing. This is Police Academy.